Hey everybody, and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. Today I get joined by the wonderful John Curtis from the EV Cafe.
You mean there's a wonderful John Curtis?
There is. He's your alter ego.
He's my father.
Well, there you go. Oh, but every week we get joined by fabulous innovators, pioneers and collaborators of our industry. And this week we have the mighty Jack Cousins, head of policies for the AA. Fantastic, Jack. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Paul, and thank you, John, very much for having me. Very excited to be here and have a really good, fun discussion with you guys and introduce myself to your listeners here at the EV Cafe.
Well, fantastic. And to those that pay any attention at all to BBC travel news reports or transport-related news reports, they might be forgiven. If you might need to go over and check on YouTube. But this man may look familiar. Jack, tell us, I mean, that is one glamorous side of your job, but tell us about both sides of your job within the AA.
You're right. Doing the TV interviews and the radio interviews, that's the glamorous part of the role, being a talking head, for want of a better phrase, for the AA. But being head of roads policy means that I get to play with lots of things that drivers think about, they dream of, they despise, they detest. And I get to be the voice of the motorist working alongside Edmund King and the rest of the team. And we get to talk about everything, be it smart motorway, seat belts and car safety, electric vehicles, of course, and the ZEV mandate, where that may or may not go, all the way through to things like private parking, taxation, all of the stuff that really keeps drivers thinking about what's the next thing. That's what I get to play with and get involved in.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europcar, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europcar's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europcar-ma. Search Europcar Business.
Jack, I'm fascinated to understand how you are so good at this. Have you been trained to be able to go in front of the press and be able to speak from such a strong foundation? You're clearly articulate, capable, but there's a certain amount of practice, I guess, that's necessary to be as good as you are.
There is a certain amount of practice, yes. I mean, somewhat self-deprecatingly, I always feel that PR people are failed actors. And indeed, politicians are definitely failed actors. And I used to be a local elected politician here in Basingstoke. So I used to go and annoy people on a Sunday morning and knock their door and say, could you vote for me, please? So I've done a fair amount of political campaigning and speech writing and talking to people. And even some of my early jobs before I joined the AA, I worked for a company that was doing the pensions for BAE Systems, and I would do presentations to people who were in the pension scheme, what their pension was going to look like. So I've had a lot of experience at talking and presenting a wide variety of things. But actually, here at the AA, this is probably the champion dream job that I could have hoped for. It's a company that I desperately wanted to work for. I managed to get my toe in the door, not doing this role, doing something completely different. I was looking after the fleet of cars for the AA driving school. So it was my responsibility to get the vehicles ordered from the manufacturer, get the dual controls ordered and fitted, the decals fitted onto the side of the car, and then sent out to the instructors. And then I moved from that into the motor manufacturer sales world, so going into the big manufacturers that we've got here in the UK, so the Fords, the Hondas, etc., and saying, make the AA your breakdown provider, and doing that good stuff. And it was only through the good work that Edmund and his team were doing that I became more and more interested in that role. I had a really good relationship with the person who had this role before me, Mr. Paul Waters. He retired. And on the day that it was announced his retirement, I sort of marched myself into Edmund's office and said, Edmund, you need to give me this job. And credit to Edmund, he said, well, you know, there's a recruitment process and, you know, you show us what you can do. And I must have impressed enough to be given this rather glamorous title. And yeah, I do feel that weight of history. You know, we've been around since 1905. We've always been the voice of the motorist, and it's my job to keep that going. And it's a really important job, but one I take very seriously. But also there's a huge amount to see, do and play with. And that variety is what keeps us going.
It's fantastic, Jack, to see the depth that you bring to the whole job. Because, I mean, what's clear? I mean, I'm a failed actor. Yes, I was in the National Youth Theatre, everybody. Many, many years ago, I had a great line called "Tennis balls, my liege." That was as good as I got. I was on the West End stage, but, you know, that was it.
Henry V, if I'm not mistaken.
I think it was... Oh, it could be, actually. I could be wrong. I thought it was Richard II. But anyway, you might well be right. You might well be right. It was a gift from the King of France to the King of England.
Definitely Henry V. It's my favourite Shakespeare play. It's definitely Henry V.
There you go. I've been quoting it wrong all the time. Hence, failed actor. Anyway, Jack, you really have brought a whole stack of insight and knowledge, and you're in working your way to the point that you've done, rather than just sort of dropping in. You've really kind of, I don't know, absorbed the whole motor industry, which of course the AA is involved in right from the very first point of call of dual controls and learning to drive all the way through to working with the manufacturers to keep the vehicles on the road and all of those good things, but also importantly to help us understand what's going on out there in the world and what we should be paying attention to. Now, I know about the smart motorways, I know about potholes. What I was really surprised around was seatbelts. The campaign around seatbelts again. I know this is nothing to do with electric vehicles, everybody, but I think there's an important principle here. Tell us about the sort of campaign around seatbelts and what's happened.
So we've analysed the data that the Department for Transport produce every year off of the Stats 19 police reports into road fatalities on our roads. And what it showed is that with car occupants, a fifth of car occupants that when they died, they were not wearing a seatbelt. So when we delved into that data a little bit further, we discovered that there was a high propensity of younger drivers and passengers who were not putting their seatbelt on. And particularly, it was an issue with younger rear-seated passengers. And when I'm saying younger, I'm not talking about children here. I'm talking about people who are aged 17 to 24. So people who have been long part of car journeys as part of their life. And for whatever reason, we are seeing young people not put their seatbelt on. And indeed, from having conversations with people in and around the office about this campaign, it's made them think about their behaviours and attitudes as well, even for themselves getting into the back of a friend's car. I spoke to one of my colleagues the other day who said, actually, thinking about it, when I get in the back of my own car and my wife's driving, I don't put my seatbelt on. And probably one of the most common things that we all do, and I know I've been a victim of it myself, and I've thought about it again, is I've got in the back of a taxi and I've gone, oh yeah, I didn't put my seatbelt on for that journey. There's something about the shape of that vehicle and the layout of those seats in the rear that makes us think, actually, we don't need to do it. And it's now, just now, triggering that switch in behaviour into going, before we set off, before I go anywhere, I must put this seatbelt on because it's so important. We see so many crashes where actually somebody's life was saved by wearing that seatbelt. So, and all it takes is that 3 to 5 seconds at the beginning of the car journey before you set off. It seems so simple, but for whatever reason, it's dropped out of vogue. It's dropped out of being something that we consciously do, and we've got to capture that and get it back.
Jack, you need to be the face of the new clunk click advert.
So I'm too young to see it initially, but I am. Well, my parents gave me a superb upbringing in brilliant television, and it was a really good TV advert. But actually, I think people like me, it doesn't hit, it doesn't wash. I think what's really actually would wash more is people like Stormzy. Stormzy got banned from driving very recently for not wearing his seatbelt. And, you know, he did the right thing. He owned up and he said, yep, I didn't have my seatbelt on, and he got banned. And actually, I think what we need to do is use him and people like him as a bastion for road safety. They've got a huge fan base. They've got a huge influence. And actually, let's use them, because people would far more definitely would want to listen to Stormzy compared to somebody like me.
The wonderful thing you do bring, though, Jack, is a kind of objective, friendly voice, in that, you know, Stormzy has a massive following, but you're getting a message through to young people about wearing safety belts without giving the waggy finger stuff. You know, you're explaining the reasons why, giving them information and giving them an opportunity to change their behaviour. And the transition to electric vehicles is very similar. You know, there are those who are out there almost pontificating from upon high that, you know, it's all about the greater good and climate change and air quality and all that stuff, which of course is right. But actually, if you're going to get through to young people, the last thing you can do is sound like a parent, which is what Paul and I tend to do sometimes. You have that beautiful objective place of being able to say, now listen, buddy, you know, we care about you very much. We've been championing the cause of drivers for longer than your grandfather has been alive. Do us a favour. Listen up, eh? That's your role.
It is our role. And you know, you bring in electric vehicles and how we help that transition. And it's a really good analogy that we are an arm around the shoulder. We know everybody is on a completely different timescale, and some people want to change right now. Others don't want to change at all. And then there is this huge group in the middle who they're not hostile, they're just hesitant. And there are a wide range of reasons as to why they're worried about moving to an EV. Some of them perfectly legitimate. They're one of the 30 to 40% of drivers that don't have any form of dedicated off-street parking. And that's their key concern. And we need to find solutions for that. There will be others that have just absorbed negative news stories from the media and have then gone, well, if this is what it looks like, I definitely don't want it. I definitely just don't want this. And it's then our role to go, right, okay, tell us what you think. Let us understand your issues, concerns, and then let's talk about it. There are concerns that people have that are perfectly legitimate, and we front them out and go, yeah, okay, that is a legitimate concern. There are some potential ways around in the short term, but in the medium to long term, they may improve. Similarly, if there's stuff that is just pure and utter nonsense, we will be a bit forthwith and say, yeah, that is nonsense. This is the reality. And what we're trying to do there is exactly right. It's not trying to shove people before they're ready. It's giving them some reassurance. It's giving them that knowledge base that actually, when you do want to make the shift, we are here to help you as the AA. But actually, there are other bodies, there are other people as well to help you on this journey. You're not alone. But if you want some reassurance, if you want some expertise and a bit of knowledge, we can help you.
And Jack, isn't it? I mean, it is about, you've got a number of, let's call them strap lines within the AA, giving drivers confidence both today and in the future. But the only reason that you can give drivers confidence that in the future bit is because, as the sign says behind you, you're always ahead. Now, what I've always been impressed about is that obviously in the learner driver contingent, you've got electric vehicles. In your own fleet, from a passenger vehicle point of view, you've got electric vehicles. In the commercial vehicle sector, both in small and large and truck-sized vans, you've got electric vehicles. You're testing, you're learning, and you're scaling. So you are always ahead, and that's how you can bring confidence. What's the most exciting thing that you've seen happen within the AA's own fleet?
It's a really good one. I mean, because I was part of the driving school, that was my introduction into the business. I always like seeing the innovations there because, you know, I've been driving on the road for a good sort of approaching 20 years now, but actually there are people coming through the system all the time, and the vehicles we drive now and the vehicles my dad drove are going to be completely different to the cars that these kids are learning to drive now. And indeed my two children, who are 10 and 7, yeah, they're going to be driving something completely different that perhaps I thought was possible and their granddad thought possible as well. So that bit of innovation comes through. Certainly, I think the breakdown side of things is really key, because ultimately when people think about the AA, they think about that yellow van or they think about that yellow truck. And we were talking about, you know, providing that confidence and arm around the shoulder. As much as we've got to talk the talk, we have to walk the walk as well. So we have to, you're absolutely right, test those vehicles, discover what works, discover what doesn't, learn, change tack, and keep going with that innovation. Using electric trucks, the real big stuff, is really fun, because that really does start dispelling some of those fears of electric vehicles can't move this kind of stuff. Well, actually, they can, they could. And as things get better, as the battery technology improves, as manufacturers improve what comes off the factory floor, things will get better.
One of the key things that DriveTech, a sister business of yours that helps people to get a better experience when they're driving, drive safer, drive more efficiently, one of the key things they taught me was that you should stop looking at the end of your bonnet as the distance that you need to look ahead to see what's coming, and actually look 200-300 meters ahead and anticipate so that you can plan accordingly. With that in mind, Jack, can you give me a sense of what the AA is looking at down the road that is coming that could be a great experience or potentially a hurdle to overcome? A pothole, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, because when I was learning to drive, my dad used to say, drive to the distance, which was exactly that. You look as far as you can and you're thinking about what's coming. And certainly if I think about the world of motoring as it is at the moment, yes, you know, the big thing right up close to drivers at the moment is electrification. But actually, if we sort of look 10, 15 years on, I think the wider world of connected vehicles, semi-autonomous, and even the potential of fully autonomous vehicles is a really interesting place for everyone to be a part in. And as much as we've got very good driver assistance technologies now on new cars coming off the factory floor, the ability where potentially drivers are going to take their hands off the wheel and give control to the technology and let that drive is both impressive, but it's equally scary. And indeed, there are a huge amount of ethical questions that have to be answered in that, in terms of what wins out. And it's something that we test. We have Europe's largest dedicated motoring panel. So we test them every month on lots of things. We want to find out their opinions on how we fix the state of the roads. But we're also asking them about these things such as autonomous technology. And we do use a tweak on the trolley problem, which is if an autonomous fully autonomous vehicle has to crash into something and someone is going to lose their life, what should it pick? And it's interesting where those drivers and where our members fall, because it's a really tricky scenario. Nobody likes thinking about it. Ultimately, the technology should never get itself in that position, but it might have to. And those are the real ethical quandaries that we have to find out from our members, but then also put that forward to government. We've contributed quite extensively to the Law Society and the Scottish Law Society's investigations and research into autonomous vehicles. And we will keep doing that, because we know this is only going to keep coming. And as we travel through towards 2030, which is only 5 years away, and beyond, that technology, that fully autonomous vehicle, isn't too far around the corner.
I wonder if something has just dawned on me whilst you've been speaking, Jack, and it's about speed, because speed kills. The faster you go, the more likely you are to end somebody's life if you have an accident. And we talk about autonomous vehicles as the logical place for that to go, yet we don't restrict vehicles and their top speed. Passenger cars, for instance, we're still building passenger cars that can do 150, 180, 200 miles an hour. And I suppose my question to you is why? If we've got the ability with software to be able to restrict that speed to something that gives you a margin for error so that you are able to go to 80 or 85, but you're not able to do 140, why do we not do the sensible things sometimes? We focus on this very far down the road autonomous thing because that's all fluffy and sexy. But actually, we know that there's a really hard nut to crack, which is giving people less freedom to choose things which are ultimately going to end up killing somebody.
It's a really good question. And I think part of that is, and I wonder if it's a little bit of a hang on from where manufacturers were competing right in the really early days of combustion engines in terms of how fast can we make this thing go? And it has just been a continuous hang on, and we've never let that bit go. You know, cars now can do easily in excess of 120 miles an hour and beyond. And you're right, from a manufacturing engineering perspective, there has been no changing that. But actually, as much as we're giving people that technology and that piece of engineering that can do that, the biggest thing in all of that, in regulating that, is me. I have a responsibility when I get in the car, not just to me and the passengers I have in my car. I have a responsibility to you, John, and you, Paul, when you're out in your cars. I have a responsibility to the cyclist and the pedestrian, because ultimately, we all want to get from A to B. And actually, spending a bit of time thinking about, it's not just my responsibility to get me to my destination, it's my responsibility that the cyclist can get to their destination as well, is so important. It's one of the things that we try and teach our pupils when they learn with us, is that we're not teaching you how to pass your driving test. We're teaching you a skill for life. We're teaching you to think ever so slightly differently about, it's not just you and the car. Yes, that's one part of the equation, but it's you and a transport system. And how do you revolve in that? And what are your roles and responsibilities? And indeed, even when drivers go through rehabilitation courses, which they do with DriveTech and various other providers out there, but I know particularly with our DriveTech instructors, they're re-educating people. They know that people know how to drive, but it's then reframing that sense of safety in terms of, it's not just about you and your passengers, it's about you and everybody else, and making sure everything can work nicely together. I think that's the key, and probably one of the things that I'd have liked to have seen perhaps come out a little bit more after the lockdowns, where people couldn't travel as much. That would have been a key opportunity to reframe the road safety conversation and go, this is the thing we want to tackle.
And I think that does, I mean, you touched on so many points. In my mind is kind of worrying from like two or three key things here. So first of all, I kind of want to think about the speed, but also the education piece, because we talked about electric vehicles and the education of understanding. And it just feels like we're at a point of so much change. We talked about the seatbelts earlier, you know, where a generation hasn't grown up with this understanding. We're now getting a generation growing up with vehicles that can accelerate at an inordinate rate. I mean, the Tesla's famous for it, but it's not just the Tesla. It's almost every brand of electric vehicle can certainly do 0 to 30 in a ridiculously quick time. And then that 0 to 60 can be, I mean, it can be below 2 seconds. Who ever thought a car, for goodness sake, that didn't have wheels the size of a small house and fire coming out of the back of it would ever do 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds? And then we've got all of the other education stuff on top of that. That's where I stick with commercial vehicles, really. We haven't got all of this drama.
But I think, actually, it goes a little bit further, because one of the things that we think is pretty key is that road safety should form part of the national curriculum. Because even at a young age, everybody forms part of the road network. They may be predominantly pedestrians or cyclists, but they're part of that conversation. And certainly as they get towards the middle and upper ends of secondary school, where they're thinking about driving, and let's face it, driving still remains the number one way of which people move around our country. It's the number one way of which goods and services are moved across the UK. We need to be having these conversations earlier about, actually, there's roles and responsibilities that come with you coming of age. And getting into schools and secondary schools as early as possible to talk about road safety, to talk about how, you know, it sounds silly, but making sure that people can cross the road safely, making sure that we can making sure that bikeability sessions are available to a wide range of people and children so that they can get confident on the road. All of that feeds into better drivers. So if we can do that as young as possible, we'll see the benefits in terms of fewer people dying on our roads, which is ultimately the thing we want to achieve. If it was on any other form of transport, there would be a national inquiry. But the fact it's on the roads, we seem to shrug our shoulders and go, yeah, okay, well, it's come down a bit, it's gone up a bit. And yet we think that's acceptable. And that's the one thing that does grind me, is that we've got to change that perspective and go, no, if the goal's zero, how do we get there? And there's a multitude of things that need to be done.
I agree with you. I guess I kind of feel that, you know, there's this classic line, old dog and new tricks. And I'm gonna put us all on the spot here. I will answer last. John, when was the last time you read the Highway Code?
It was about 4 years ago. And the reason I read it, The reason I read it was because I was doing a piece, I was writing a piece, and I wasn't sure of the answer. And so I had to go into the Highway Code because if you don't report factually, somebody will phone you up and give you a good earful. So it was important for me to do that. But I know, I mean, for instance, I have my driving license now, if I don't do anything silly, until 2034. I'll be 69. I haven't been tested formally for 52 years. What incentive is there for me to look at the Highway Code, to know all the rules of the road? And that's the thing that frustrates the heck out of me. We don't have this consistent onward development of my skills. We do, because I've paid for additional courses. But the reality is most drivers pass a test, get in a car, whatever size engine it's got, doesn't matter, go out, do your worst. Ridiculous.
The last time I read the Highway Code cover to cover would have been a couple of years ago, when we had the wholesale changes in the Highway Code, where we introduced the hierarchy of road users and we introduced a lot of, you know, very positive road safety changes. That was the last time I read it to cover. There are lots of times that I dip in and out for certain things where I'm either writing a press story or I'm doing a bit of policy research and I want to double check my thinking. But you're absolutely right. Once we pass that driving test, we go, nowadays, pass the theory test, we go, yeah, we don't need that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Jack, I'm in the highway what category? I guess the point is, so like the Highway Code now says that pedestrians crossing the road on for a car, a left-hand turn, had the right of way. Mm. That's correct. It's in the Highway Code. 98% of the population have never seen that. Mm. And a few pedestrians are brave enough to put it to the test. And usually ends up with a bit of a argy-bargy. And I suppose it's this kind of concept that I'm sort of thinking education needs to be front and center, right? You know, I mean, and this is why policy, you, Edmund, and all of the guys are really helping us to kind of readdress or re-engage with that. But do you see my point? It feels difficult.
I do see that. And it's actually something that we tested in and amongst our panel. So we asked them at the time, literally the month before the changes were going to go live, you know, these changes are coming, right? And the vast majority of people went, no, what the hell are you talking about? So then we pointed them into a link into this is what it says. And then we asked them a month later and said, have you read the changes to the Highway Code that came in this month? No, what the hell are you talking about? So then we left it for 12, 18 months and we said, okay, the Highway Code changed 12, 18 months ago. Can you remember what changed? What do you mean the Highway Code changed? What the hell are you talking about? Was the predominant answer. So you're absolutely right. There are huge education things. And actually, as part of that process, our recommendation to the Department for Transport was, you send everybody a letter each year saying, your car tax is due for renewal. Here's your car tax renewal. inserted in that should have been a pamphlet going, the highway code has had a major overhaul and you need to know about it. These are the top changes that you now need to adhere to. And if you want to discover more about why we've done it and the full rules, here's a link. But yet it never happened. So the government is desperately asking people to educate themselves, and yet we're not necessarily helping people with the tools necessary to go and do that. I could probably foresee why they said cost, but then what price safety?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Now then, young Jack, you have an opportunity to go out into the AA and to spend a day doing a job that isn't your own and isn't Edmund King's. Whose job would you do from the wide range of things that the AA provide? And why would you choose that one?
I would hands down pick being a patrol, especially because I have very, very little mechanical knowledge and experience. I can just about hang a shelf. I can just about put a picture up. I can just about plug a new TV in. After that, I'm struggling. So I'd like to know what it's... I'd actually like to know how a car works and actually be competent enough to start taking bits out, put them down and know exactly where I've put it down to and be able to fix it and put it back in again and get it working. That sense of satisfaction of it is, you know, when those jobs come through to the patrols, it is very top level that you're going to see Mr. Smith. They're at this location and this is the problem that they've reported. That problem they've reported is a very colloquial thing. Car won't start. Right, well, why is it not starting? The internal checklist of, okay, I'm going to look at X, Y, Z, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, and they will know fairly quickly, okay, if it's not these things, then it's probably that. They'll test it. Yeah, okay, it is that. And then they can fix it. How incredible. It's like waving a magic wand. And it just amazes me how our patrol force are so knowledgeable and are so good at fixing cars. It does genuinely blow me away. As I said, for somebody who is not mechanically minded, who is technologically challenged at the best of times, that's the job I would pick. Just to have that feeling for 24 hours.
Well, do you know what? It's funny because we're going to give you the opportunity to do something that you just said then. And we'll come on to that in a second. But I will say, I was extremely impressed going out with Arben, who is a key assist engineer. So basically, like a patrol, but specifically for keys. And quite frankly, probably saved one of his customers about £3,000 for a complete engine remap, because he knew that the particular key that he was being asked to recut would need recoding, and the recoding could cause untold damage to the whole mapping of the vehicle. But he said that there's other companies out there that will do it, try it, and the whole vehicle could go down. And you're like, wow, that's the kind of knowledge that makes a difference, isn't it?
It is. They are, as I said, they are incredible. Be them the patrols who go out and do the day-to-day that everybody thinks of, through to the key assist guys, Paul, that you've described there, even the fuel assist team. So these are people who have done something, fortunately, I've never done, and I definitely can't do now I drive an EV, where somebody puts petrol in a diesel or diesel in a petrol. It's a blooming expensive mistake to make. The record we have seen is from the same person in a 24-hour period was 5. They did it all on the same day.
What?
So they'd put the wrong fuel in, called us out, we drained it. Right, okay, you can top it up now. Picked up the wrong one again. Oh no, I've done it again. Drained it, did it again.
That's fantastic. I feel so much better. I feel great.
Refilled it, took it home, brought their partner's car out. Oh God, this needs fuel. and did it. And because the first one was petrol or diesel, the second one was diesel, but done diesel and petrol. And just a very horrible day for that person. Thankfully, not one of us.
Go electric.
But, yeah.
Definitely go electric.
Very expensive mistake. Definitely buy a car with a plug on it, because, goodness. Yeah. That
now
that
Jack,
doesn't happen.
You said If I had a magic wand, well, we have a tradition on this here podcast that we do, and it is to hand you a magic wand. And for those of you watching over on YouTube, whether you're there, I am now holding the magic wand that we got given now pass to you, Jack. So here comes the magic wand through the camera. There you go. You've got to grab that. That's it.
Oh. Thank you very much. I shall treasure this, and I shall wave it frequently.
Well, you had sense. So this is a one-use-only magic wand. I'm so sorry. And so we need to know what that wish will be as you wave the magic wand.
Oh, okay. If I've only got the one wish, then it has to be a far bigger focus from not just government, but from ourselves on road safety. And my ultimate wish, therefore, is let's get road fatalities from our current levels of around 1,500 a year down to zero. There should be no way that somebody can walk out their front door at any given day and not come home because of something that's happened on the road, which is, in the vast majority of the time, completely preventable. So if I've only got the one wish, that's where I'm putting it.
Well, and it's a laudable wish.
All I'm grateful for is that we have people like Jack in places where you can actually go and do some good. You know, I think very often we speak to people who have good ideas and good intentions. And what you're able to do is to match a brilliant brain with a great presentation to go and make stuff happen. And that's a fairly unique opportunity, Jack. And I'm just glad that you're sitting in the seat saying the things that need saying and influencing people to make better policy, go and do the right thing, and ultimately make the roads that bit safer, cleaner and better for all of us.
Thank you very much. As I said at the start, it's an absolute sort of dream role for me to come into this and play a very small part. I'm blessed to have a very good team around me because you're only as good as the people you work with. I'm blessed that I've got a fantastic team to work with. And that is our ambition. We know that we represent the voice of the motorist in lots of various things. But actually, the crux of it is, how do we keep people safe? And that's what we want to do.
Speaking of a small part, here's Paul.
There you go. There's the one the one in every podcast. There we go. It's been a real privilege. And I can see why the AA is always ahead, because it's got people like you that are passionate and determined to make that difference, to bring education, to support, put an arm around us all in our motoring lives, you know, and also to pick us up when we're all breaking down beside the road. Because, you know, your patrol teams are brilliant when they turn up. They're super positive, you know, always able to pick you up, give you good advice beside the road. And you guys are looking to help. And it's great to have organizations like you that not only are partners with the EV Cafe, because that's what we're very grateful for, but partners with every single motorist out there to help them, because you're always ahead. So with that load of cheese and corny repeating of strap lines, but they're all true. This is the fact, you know. These are true representations of your business, and I'm so thrilled that we get to spend a little bit of time with you, and we look forward to hearing from you many times, and we'll be watching out for you. Jack, thank you for today. Any final thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Just a thank you very much to yourself, Paul, and to John for having me. I appreciate you're both incredibly busy people, and to spend a little bit of time with me and tell you a little bit about what I do has been an absolute pleasure. Would love to come back again and talk to you about anything and everything. If you wanted to talk about whatever, I'm more than happy to help and come back again, but an absolute pleasure.
That's on. That is definitely on.
I was going to say, John's going to be grabbing you for the news. You're going to be a star of the EV Cafe news. Forget BBC, ITV, all that lot. No, you're going to be EV Cafe news roving reporter. And Jack from the AA says, over to you, Jack. You know, all that good stuff. So we would love to have you on again. It's been great. And so if anybody has been on a rock under their whole lives, do go and go to the AA website, connect with the AA. If you're not a member of the AA and 3 or 4 million people already are, please do go and check out what they can do. I'm signing up my own daughter to get that support because it's the kind of support that you need and we need. I'm beginning to sound like an advert now. It's terrible. So head over to our website, theevcafe.org, for many, many more wonderful podcasts like this. Also, you can watch on Spotify and Apple and follow all of our LinkedIn pages, the EV Cafe News, which John leads on. With all of that said, right there, everybody, and thank you for joining us.